WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're about to talk to John Horgan on being an optimist in a pessimistic time. And then we will have a call in asking, what's the best idea that you've had in the last year? And we have some great examples already, so we'll do that a little bit later on. But first, we hope everyone will help out during our winter membership drive. And if you haven't done it yet, we have a great incentive right now. Anybody who pledges by noon will automatically be entered in a contest to win a MacBook Pro and an iPad 2. That's Apple's latest laptop and their hyper-popular tablet, both a MacBook Pro and an iPad 2, to the lucky winner. You're automatically entered when you call 1-888-376-WNYC or go to WNYC.org to make a pledge. Now, you don't have to pledge to enter, but we hope you do to support WNYC with a contribution. The folks at TechServe have generously donated this iPad and MacBook Pro. It takes just a few minutes to show your support for this program and all the diverse news, information, and music programs that you've come to rely on from WNYC. Now, you're already entered if you're a WNYC monthly sustainer or if you pledged during the buyback or earlier in the drive. But this contest closes up at noon, so that's just 53 minutes from right now. So if you're going to support WNYC this year, might as well do it right now, and you'll be entered if you do it by noon to win an iPad 2 and a MacBook Pro. Everybody on the bus, we hope. 1-888-376-WNYC. Help support the station and be entered to win. 1-888-376-WNYC. 1-888-376-9692. Or pledge online at WNYC.org. Thanks, everybody, so much. Back with us now is science journalist John Horgan, author of The End of War, one of the inspirations for our End of War series. We invited John back today for a conversation that is a little bit off that topic, and yet at the center of his argument that war can be abolished. It's the idea that things on planet Earth are generally getting better, including less warlike. So John Horgan, author and optimist, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian.
And this is how your book ends, with a one-paragraph argument that things are generally getting better on planet Earth over the last 100 years. Want to make the case?
Sure. And I should say I just expanded on some of the things I said in my book in an essay in the Chronicle of Higher Education. I pointed out, and this was inspired by some conversations that I've had with my students at Stevens Institute. My students are extraordinarily pessimistic about the state of humanity and the future. So I've tried to point out some empirical facts to them to help them have a little more faith in humanity. One is that over the past 200 years, basically since the Industrial Revolution, there has been an enormous expansion of wealth, starting in Europe and then in the United States, but then worldwide, the number of people who live in extreme life-threatening poverty is still enormous today. It's about 1 billion people. That's a shameful number, but that is a tiny fraction of what the number used to be 150, 200 years ago. We have gotten much healthier over the last century. Lifespan has doubled since 1900. Which is an extraordinary achievement and testament to science and medicine. As I think we discussed the last time I was on, the number of people who live under free or at least partly free political systems has expanded from about 10% in 1910, just a century ago, to about two-thirds of humanity today. So all these trends are massive. They jump out of the data. And based on how far we've come so far, I say this to my students, and I also hope I can convince your listeners out there, we can go much further. There's so much more we can do to improve our lives.
So optimists of the world, unite. We are opening up the phones for a discussion about big picture optimism. Want to feel good going into the weekend? John Horgan says, forget what's happening this week in the headlines. Focus your mind on the last 100 years, and you'll feel humanity is headed in the right direction and things can be better yet. 212-433-WNYC. Are you a global optimist? You don't generally get a lot of airtime if you are. So here's your chance. Optimist of the world, unite at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for John Horgan. And yet, John, as you know, if you go online or turn on TV news, you will see the slaughter in Syria, economic decline in America, slave labor in China. Is the difference a science writer's perspective versus maybe a political reporter's one?
Well, I'm reporting on these massive trends that are taking place over long periods of time. If you read the newspaper any particular day, there is so much that we still have to be worried about. Just since we last spoke, the drums of war are beating for us, or perhaps Israel, to strike Iran because of its nuclear program. The bloodshed in Syria is terrible. I do think people need to see these in their historical context. They are very severe problems that need to be addressed, but they are minuscule compared to the problems that we had in the middle of the 20th century when we had really massive genocide, World War I, World War II, that killed tens of millions of people. So, yes, we still have problems, but we have shown that we can overcome these problems in the past.
And by the way, listeners, yeah, if you want to call in and tell John Horgan that he's living in La La Land, you could do that too. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. To dig a little deeper on what you just said, you use this generally positive sweep of history as an argument toward the idea that abolishing war is possible if we've made so much progress in lifespans and democracy and all these big things. But much of the time that you cover when you say things have gotten better in the last 100 years included some of the worst wars and technology-enabled mass killings and the Holocaust in human history.
Yes, and my hope is that we've actually learned from these catastrophes, and that it's very unlikely in the future that, for example, a really advanced industrialized nation would fall under the spell of a madman like Hitler. You know, I just want to address something that came up in some of the responses to the discussion about the end of war on your website. A really common theme and concern of people is that in the future, because of global warming, population growth, and so forth, we're going to have wars over resources, over water, land, food, oil, and things like that. One of the most important parts of my book attempts to show that historically it has just not been the case that resource scarcity inevitably leads to armed conflict. In fact, if you look at the wars over the last 10 years that the United States has been embroiled in, I think it demonstrates the theme that war begets war. The 9/11 attacks on on the U.S. led to wars of revenge against Afghanistan and Iraq. Right now, Iran is responding out of fear of attacks from the United States and Israel in possibly building a nuclear program, and we, out of fear of what Iran is doing, are threatening them. So here's a case where war almost becomes this independent variable or meme that is self-perpetuating. I think if we realize that and stop blaming war on some of these other factors, then we can come up with better solutions for getting rid of it.
And listeners, if you want to join our end of war survey or respond to it, you could do so at wnyc.org/endofwar. The basic question that we're asking, inspired by John Horgan, is war inevitable? And we don't mean immediate war right now against Iran or something like that. We mean, can humans ever abolish war? Is war inevitable? And 60% of our several hundred respondents so far say, yes, war is inevitable. and 40% say no, humans can abolish war. That's a little more optimistic than your typical response. You usually have about 80-20. So there is a strain of optimism in the Brenlo Show audience.
I was delighted. I just saw the results of your survey compiled this morning. I was delighted to see that 40% of your audience is saying that that perhaps we can get rid of war in the future. That is a much better number than I've gotten in my own surveys, where it's just 15 or even 10% of people are optimists. There's this wonderful phrase of Norman Cousins, the old 1970s pundit intellectual that I wanted to mention this morning. Cousins like to say, "We don't know enough to be pessimists." I think it's a wonderful phrase. I would go further than that and say we actually know enough to be optimists today. And I think it's especially important to be optimistic, almost a moral duty, I would say, when you consider that pessimism leads so often to fatalism and despair and a passive acceptance of some of our problems, including war and militarism.
Gloria in Jamaica, maybe not as optimistic as you. Gloria, hello. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing, Brian?
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that you left out global warming and climate change, and also our impact on other animal and plant species.
Thank you. And if those things come to pass with their worst case scenarios, global warming could literally destroy the Earth.
You had Chris Hedges, the great war correspondent, on recently, and he's really pessimistic. When he looks into the future, he sees global warming causing water shortages and wars over that. As I just said, that historically is not what has happened. I think there's a lot of evidence that humanity will come together and cooperate to overcome some of these environmental problems. I also am hopeful when I just look at how things have changed here in New York over the past 30 years. I moved to New York in 1980. There was still a lot of air pollution in the city. The Hudson River was so polluted that you would be insane to go swimming in it. I now often go swimming in the Hudson. The skies here in the city are much cleaner than they were. This, again, is evidence that we are addressing some of these problems successfully.
That humans can.
Yes.
Alex in Woodbridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm not as optimistic as your guests. I think it's pretty obvious that as we evolve as a species, we tend to fix things. But your guest tends to chop history in 100 years or so. And while we're going through those 100 years, we suffer a lot. So my point is that even though the world is getting better, we still have to go through the changes and the revolutions. And although they're not as bloody as they were before, they're still painful for the ones that have to go through it.
Absolutely. So bloody trees to get to a peaceful forest.
Here is one of the ironies of, for example, the finding that as democracy spreads, there tends to be less war because democracies rarely, if ever, fight each other. The quest for democracy, the desire for freedom that you see in the Arab Spring, and especially in Syria right now, earlier in Egypt, Tunisia, and Libya, that itself often can lead to violence. I do think that there are ways. I know that there are ways because they've been used by some of these freedom activists in these countries to create a more just political system to promote democracy without relying on violence. It is still a terrible problem as we're seeing in Syria, though.
Listeners, go to our website, WNYC.org, and keep this conversation going on our webpage. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or answer the survey. Take the survey on our End of War page, WNYC.org/endofwar. The last paragraph of John Horgan's book, The End of War, says, over the past century, most nations have shifted away from monarchy and other forms of authoritarian rule and toward democracy. Life expectancies have soared, and the proportion of people affected by extreme life-threatening poverty has plummeted. Humanity is healthier, more prosperous, and freer than it has ever been, And he concludes, Norman Cousins once wrote, no one knows enough to be a pessimist. Horgan says, I'd go further. We know enough to be optimists. And there you get the argument for optimism in the 21st century from John Horgan. Take it or leave it. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on again, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.